All right, in the spirit of celebration, I'm going to ask you, what are some moments you've been really proud of recently? What was your initial reaction when you found out about something? Or what were other emotions that came along and perhaps came like after that initial reaction?
Happiness, again, I just feel like is so easily equated with like, oh, you don't know any better. You don't know what's out there and you are naive and you are too young to understand the harsh realities of this world. But why do they have to be mutually exclusive, your happiness and the way that the world is? I don't have to have a justifiable intellectual reason behind why I want to dress up in heels and go to H Mart. I just want to do it.
OMG, we should tell Johnny that this is what we thought about these pieces.
We should.
We should tweet at Johnny. Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where two Asian American women share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. If you're new, we wanted to share a little bit about Bamboo and Glass with all of you. On the podcast, you'll hear about Asian Americans reckoning with their place in the world and discovering the abundant possibilities of who they can choose to be in their careers, families, relationships, etc. So Sophia and I have been in a long-distance friendship for 8 years now. We never went to the same school or lived in the same city. And after we graduated from college, we even went to different cities. And even though our worlds didn't get any closer to each other than when we were younger, we felt less alone when we intentionally created space through this podcast to learn, document our personal journeys week by week, and invite a global digital community of friends and strangers to learn, unlearn, and take action alongside us. We share new episodes every Sunday. You can listen to full episodes wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass to be up to date with what episodes are coming out and what's going on in our personal lives. So be sure to check us out on Instagram.
Yay! So it has been a long time since we've done an episode with just us two.
I feel like we say that every time we do an episode of just us two.
I was just joking about how it is so much less stressful when we're setting up the Zencaster, which is the tool that we're using, because when we're setting it up and there's a guest, if there's any hiccup and we have to ask our guest to reconnect their headphones, it's just very stressful. So
yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes. There's a lot of behind the scenes that people don't know about. And I think it makes everyone think that podcasting is a breeze, which in many ways, once those things work out, it is a breeze. But
if they don't work out,
it's very frustrating.
Yes, there's a reason we allocate quite a bit of time to recording, because we just want to make sure that the guests don't feel like frazzled and that the technical challenges don't infringe upon their ability to share their ideas. Mm-hmm. But speaking of behind the scenes, I wanted to share with everyone who's listening that we just got to do a screening of Tan's short film. You probably saw on our Instagram stories, like, what were Sophia and Tan doing in the Bay Area? Why was Sophia's sister? Why was Amy and RJ together? Amy and RJ have been on our podcast before. And yes, we were all filming Tan's short film. And so it's the end of your first year of film school. We can do a whole episode to catch up about film school. But I wanted to ask, how was it hosting the screening and post-screening Q&A about the short film? You got to share a little bit of the behind the scenes. I loved how you hosted it. So I just wanted to like catch up about how you felt.
Well, thank you for saying that you liked how I hosted it, because I was really nervous for it, because not only am I sharing something that I had been working on for months at that point, but I was also focused on entertaining in a way by hosting the Q&A. And I honestly, my main focus and my main goal was just to make Ivana feel as comfortable as possible. Because if I think about, I mean, it's probably different for her since she has two older siblings who are quite a bit older than her. But if I was a 13-year-old and I was in a Zoom call with, you know, a bunch of people in their mid late 20s, I'd probably be feeling really nervous, and especially when I am going to be called on and needing to answer any questions. And so I just really wanted to make sure that she felt really loved I feel like she's not aware of how incredible that she was in the short film, because you know that whole thing of, you know, your family and your friends are going to hype you up because they're your family and friends. But I'm just trying to tell her from a very unbiased perspective that no, she did a really, really great job. And I think everyone felt that too. Also, everyone I show this to thinks she's like 7 years old. So she looks like half the age that she actually is.
Yeah.
Which just works in my favor. But yeah, it was really wonderful getting to host it with a lot of friends, because in COVID, you just don't get the chance to share a lot of the updates. And I just found myself, you know, I could have gone one way of sharing out the link to my friends and getting them to watch it. But I just really enjoy seeing people's reactions to the film, and also just what questions or things that stood out to them immediately after, and having a conversation. And so I figured, why not just do a little event just amongst me and my friends? And I think it was very precious that you recorded a reaction video of Ivana, and I watch it like every day because it just makes me smile so big.
Yeah, so before the screening, she had seen portions of the final footage, but not not with like the music and everything together. Mm-hmm. And it was, yeah, so from my perspective, I was sitting next to my sister watching people like smile as she gave an answer, like watching you ask her questions. And it was so cool because I feel like she has so many thoughts that are so mature and interesting, and no one really asks her about them, like outside of me, like even her friends. I don't think she's really chats about this with her friends. And so it was so cool to see this side of her be celebrated by people who are so much older than her and feel like she's not juvenile or immature at all. Like, in fact,
her and they're like meeting her for the first time too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was very precious. And I love the way that you prepared questions for each person, but you bounced from person to person. So it never felt like we were waiting for one person to talk for 5 minutes to give their response. It felt very fast.
Podcasting gives you really great experience to know how to do that really well. So.
Dude, it reminded me of those like YouTube videos where, you know, like The Swoon, for example, when they're like interviewing the K-drama stars, but it wasn't edited. It was like in real time, and it still felt so poppy and quick. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm glad that you enjoyed it, Sophia. And thank you again for being my partner in crime on so many creative projects. I was talking to Andrea the other day, who we've also had on the podcast, and she was like, yeah, just seeing you and Sophia on that call, like, Sophia has your back, like you two have each other's backs like all the time. And I was just like, wow, that's so precious that she was able to feel that for just from a Zoom call with like 20 people. And so I'm very appreciative that people are able to share that with us, and to just affirm that, you know, we're not like we're doing this podcast, but we also are able to do so many other things together. And that's just been really, really exciting. And I wanted to ask you, as just kind of like a check-in for yourself. So May is coming to an end when we're recording this, which was Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. How are you feeling about May ending? It's just us two, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've chatted with a couple friends about this, including you. There is a phrase that I saw on TikTok that really stood out to me, and it was, are you being represented or are you being marketed to? And that thought came up again and again throughout May, just seeing all these companies feature Asian Americans and doing quite a good job featuring a wide range of Asian Americans, different ages, different like nationalities and backgrounds. So there was great representation actually from all the companies that I saw. But I do think that this is a time of increased pressure for Asian creators. A lot of my other creator friends mentioned that there are so many competitions and awards and lists, and it's just not really clear how people make it on this list. And you feel like you need to be supportive and cheering of everyone, but you're also kind of wondering how these lists come to be, and these lists end up being really influential, but also not very influential because there are so many of them. It felt like there was a little bit of this unspoken pressure and competition to really speak up about your, like, this is your one chance to speak up and kind of like, okay, if you are someone who is hesitant to speak up about your Asian culture or heritage or background, this is the month where it's safe to do so because everyone else is doing it. But it's also the month where if you do it, your voice is kind of drowned out by the other people who are doing it, which in some ways it's amazing that so many people feel empowered to speak out, but it's also very, very it can make you feel self-conscious when you're like, oh shoot, I'm sharing this really personal thing. People are probably liking it because they're obligated to, or people might not even like it because they might not see it because their feed is filled with so much other content. So I just, there are a lot of really polarizing thoughts that went through my mind and that I am, and went through the minds of my other friends who are also creators.
Yeah. I think it's this questioning of whether it's genuine celebration and genuine uplifting of the community, whether it's from within the community or from outside of the community, like these different companies that have the APAHM banner on their websites and whatnot. And I think it's interesting that you called out creators feel this particular pressure, because creators just happen to be the most visible. And yes, I totally, again, understand why people are tired of talking about representation, and they're tired of, you know, rehashing the same conversations over and over again instead of doing the actual creating. But also that's what the rest of the world is focusing on too. A lot of time, that's the thing that gets the headlines. That's the thing that everyone is talking about, like BTS Butter and also the McDonald's collab that they did. That's all I was seeing on my social media. And so you can't deny the influence that media and creating has, but it is a lot of pressure because it feels like, oh, this is the month that I need to put out my best work. Because after the month is over, no one's going to be paying attention anymore. People are going to move on to June, which is Pride Month. And it's just like, why are we siloed to just one month where we can celebrate? Especially when just by the essence of me creating is enough already to be celebrated all year long. And so I'm glad that May is over, that May is ending, because we went through that thought process too when we were making our Instagram guides. Like, it was honestly, because we had done an APAHM specific episode last year, and when we reflected on it, we were saying that, yeah, it felt like a lot of pressure to find, you know, things that are unique that other people aren't always talking about, and to have good reasons and explanations as to why these are things that are worthwhile for people to take a look at. And so I think doing the podcast episode was a lot of pressure. And so I definitely went into May thinking, oh, we're not going to do anything. Like, we're just going to kind of do our own thing. But then just seeing the influx of so much APAHM content definitely made me think like, oh, shoot, like, should we be doing something? Like, are we not doing enough? Especially because we were also getting recognized for one particular award as well. And so feeling like, oh, we're just taking and not really, it felt like we weren't giving, even though we of course are giving every single week. And I thought of the idea of doing the Instagram guides, because I was like, hey, our last Instagram guide was very, very well received. And so what if we did a couple of APAHM ones? And we kind of talked about whether we wanted to do separate categories, if we wanted to just do one guide, like encompassing a lot of different things. And we were like, we want the challenge of having different categories, because that would force us to also do our research and do our own education of what are things out there. And we did three, and two of them were luckily in collaboration with two of our good friends, which I think really, really helps to just hear the things that they were genuinely excited about, and also give them that platform too, where we can curate a list together. But we were planning on doing three more, and I just didn't want to do it at all.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you brought up our thought process behind this. And something I am really proud of is how much thought we put into picking not only just the overall podcast, for example, the podcast that we like, but also specific episodes we liked and why we like them. Because I think whenever I see these lists of like, oh, Asian podcasters you should listen to, it's cool that, for example, we would be, that Asian creators are being featured. But in some ways, it feels a little bit tokenizing to say, oh, all you say about this creator is, oh, they're Asian. So, and you should be caring about Asian people. So listen. And we really worked, we spent so much time, and our collaborators, Hillary and Kevin, spent so much time like really picking specific pieces and highlighting reasons to like them, aside from the fact that, oh, well, it's created by an Asian. And yeah, okay,
and we also wanted them to be inclusive too. So like, they did a really good job of, you know, picking people from all sorts of different identities. And that's definitely just an interesting space to be in, where there is this obligation to kind of like everything that is coming out, or to be in the know of all the content that's coming out, because they all share the same identity. The creators share the same identity, but it's not because of anything else. Like, it's not like, oh, they're all rom-coms, and so, like, I'm a rom-com fan, and so I'm going to watch all the rom-coms by Asian Americans. It's like, no, we are supposed to all watch all the movies by Asian Americans, regardless of what genre they are, what topic that they're focused on. And so I think that's really hard, for sure. And
yeah.
Hopefully as we get more content, people are able to make that distinction too, of like, you can be supportive of the community, but still not have to like every single thing that's out there. I think that's a lot of pressure to just put on yourself, when really denying, you know, your ability to genuinely say whether you like something or don't, which you should always be able to share.
Yeah. And I also wanted to share our decision for not making any more guides beyond the three.
Yeah. Which, you know, we might make more. It just didn't have to be in May.
Right. Exactly. And I really appreciate that you brought it up, because I was feeling a lot of, we had brought up the idea. I was starting to brainstorm on my own time, felt a lot of obligation to go out of my way, because I didn't want to just like be like, okay, who are the first 10 people who come to my mind? Because they're probably going to be people with big followings, you know, recency bias from social media, right? Yeah. I don't want to, like, if we're going to put together a guide, I really want to be thoughtful about it and amplify people who haven't had the same like visibility. But that requires so much research. And we didn't want to fall for that pressure that we felt was unhelpful, like the pressure of everything has to happen in May. So we decided to give ourselves time and to put this together some other time, and to kind of set the, and to kind of show that we believe that these types, this type of amplification can happen anytime. So you don't have
I think also the fact that we wanted to spend a lot of time researching shows how they're like, a lot of these businesses or accounts, like, we personally weren't following in the first place, and so I think it's even commentary of like, it wouldn't have felt genuine. Like, we wouldn't, we would only be promoting these because we did research in the last like 2 weeks, rather than like actually spending and sitting down with the content or the products that they've created and really been like, I genuinely really want to support this person and really uplift them, because I just to my core believe in what their mission and believe in what they're doing. And I think that's, again, not just a 1 month commitment. That's generally like a lifelong journey of like, you know, some people make the commitment to support primarily BIPOC businesses. And that's something that I could be better at. And I think not really knowing as many that I would have liked to put on the guide was telling of how that's something that I haven't really prioritized, but that's something I do want to prioritize. So I'd rather make that guide when I have done more of that research on my own, on my own terms, not because I want to output something for the world.
Yeah. And I think it also reflects our own stage of learning and unlearning, right? Like, at this stage of my life, I know and have listened to podcasts by a lot of Asian creators, haven't been, am not that aware of or spending as much time researching Asian created businesses, and that's fine.
Yeah. And that's fine. We don't need to know everything in this whole world. But I feel like that's a really good segue into the topic for today, because we have a book that we are genuinely very excited to talk about. So Sophia was the one who shared a couple of excerpts from this book with me to prepare for this episode. So why don't you share what this book is about?
Yeah, so this is Johnny Sun's Goodbye Again. There are a lot of beautiful themes in this collection of essays and poems. Themes like friendship, belonging, anxiety, productivity, family, nostalgia, striving, motivation, so many topics. I actually got to meet Johnny Sun at a event at UW, and he just had the most like calming and thoughtful presence. And so when I saw on Twitter that he was coming out with a new book, I was very excited. So he also he is an amazing creator who has worked on other books as well.
He's worked on Good Morning, Good Night, the illustrations with Lin-Manuel Miranda. He's a screenwriter for BoJack Horseman, which I was like, whoa, that's really cool. He also is a PhD student at MIT. So he's doing a lot.
I just thought, I was so curious to read what is in the mind of someone who is so well-rounded and a creator in so many different ways. So I picked a couple pieces that I asked you to read. And so maybe we'll just share my favorite section of each piece, and then I have some questions and reactions that I'd love to get your thoughts on.
Okay,
so The first piece is called This Is Really Happening in all caps. And a theme from this piece is the fear of celebrating beautiful moments in your life. And one excerpt that really stood out is, if it's happening, that means I can severely screw it up. And if I severely screw it up, that means it will not be happening anymore. And if it's not happening anymore, that means everyone will know that I severely screwed it up. Another part of my fear of celebrating something as really happening is the fear that celebrating it will make me unable to be critical about it, which I fear will make me unable to do a good job at it. And something that he was working towards was being attentive out of love instead of critical out of fear. So Tan, this is the first piece I sent over to you.
It was also not even in the context of this podcast episode, first of all. I guess let me share that context a little bit. So I'm going to Korea over the summer to do a film shoot, and this is ongoing right now, and I think it has been an experience that has been filled with a lot of imposter syndrome. I had a really hard time not feeling overwhelmed by that, because I went from filming a short film in your house, Sophia, with just like all the random knickknacks that we would find, like the magnets, the bobby pins to be able to put the set together. And then to now all of a sudden be planning for something that feels so grand. And there's part of me that wants to be really excited about that, but then there's also a part of me that is very fearful of like, oh, what if I fuck it up like so badly? Like what if I fuck it up because I'm so not prepared for any of this? Like I don't feel ready at all. And it's been really hard to feel grateful for that opportunity and to feel like I'm ready to step up to the challenge and really do my best and have an outpouring of love. And I think what Johnny said about being unable to be critical by celebrating this, I really, really resonate with that, because I'm just always so hard on myself, and I think most people are, to be able, and it's this idea that by being hard on myself, then I will do an even better job as a result. And also it just really brings the question, like, why do I have to be critical in these moments? Like, why is it necessary that something I love is also, you know, needs to be deemed of high quality by society or by others? Like, aren't all of us tired of being critical of each other, of ourselves, and feeling distrustful of like what affirmations people share with us, to even rob myself of that proper celebration? Mm-hmm. And so this, I really, and also the way that this is worded or written, really happening is like capitalized. And so I feel like that's a pretty good way of emphasizing like this is really happening. So that was kind of my experience, and I really appreciated you sharing that excerpt with me when I was going through all those thoughts. But I'd love to hear what you thought as well as you read it.
Yeah, this excerpt was definitely, Tan and I were brainstorming, ooh, what kinds of episodes we want to do together. And then I was like, wait, we recently chatted about these emotions you were feeling. And I was like, maybe you would find some comfort in reading this piece. And they were like, wait, let's just read other pieces from Johnny's book too. I love what he said about how loving something and being passionate about something can motivate you to be critical, and fear doesn't have to be the driving force behind excellence. And that's something that I think about a lot too. I think a lot about like negative motivation versus positive motivation, and I'm really trying to unlearn the need of negative motivation. Like an example would be like, I dislike the way I look, or I'm so lazy, I need to be better, instead of, you know, and replacing that with like positive motivation is like, wouldn't it be so exciting if I got to grow in this way? Like, wouldn't it be so exciting to like tackle this and like have a lot of the discipline and attentiveness come out of that positive motivation instead?
Yeah, I think there's something about celebrating, like unapologetically celebrating, that society has somehow framed it as being very, if it comes from like a place of naivete. There's always something that comes up with celebrating that can put people down, whether it's they're getting really cocky because they think they're all dead now because they're celebrating about this, or they're celebrating like a small one. It's like, why are you celebrating that? Like, you still have so much farther to go. Like, why is this moment so important? Why are you making such a big deal out of it? And of course, it's, you know, so many people talking from their own personal experience, insecurities, by responding in this way. But it does have an effect on everyone being like really fearful of celebrating and wanting to share that. Like even I remember for my birthday, you put together this little like bamboo and glass milestones Canva file. And I remember being like, maybe I'll share it with people. And then I remember you were like, oh, like maybe just share it on your close friends. Like maybe because maybe it comes off too braggy. And it's like, well, why do we feel like, you know, genuinely celebrating something that we've worked really hard for? Is our immediate reaction to be like, oh, that comes off as braggy, so I can't post it online?
I remember that. And I think now that I look back on that moment, I was really afraid that. So this milestone included milestones in downloads, milestones in followers, right? I was afraid that people who didn't know us very well would see that and have their first impression be, oh, so I guess this is what Tan and Sophia are measuring and valuing. And I was like really afraid of people taking it out of context. But oh my gosh, I'm like sorry to hear that I kind of kept you back from celebrating that a little bit.
No. I'm just saying, like reflecting on that moment, that just fits in really well, right? Of, you know, celebrating can come in different forms too, right? Like celebrating by yourself, celebrating with your loved ones, celebrating with, you know, especially during the pandemic when like I can't keep in touch with, I physically just cannot keep in touch with every single person. Sometimes the easiest thing is just to put it out on social media and just be like, this is what I'm up to. And then like, you know, if people are interested, then they'll respond, like reply to the story and be like, hey, like, let's catch up. Or like, wow, I'm really interested in learning more about that. And sometimes, you know, casting that wide net is like really effective. But before casting out that wide net, is there's a lot of fear of like, oh, what are people going to think of me? Even though I am doing this maybe even just for like one response or one person to share one person to share how they can help out in some way.
All right, in the spirit of celebration, I'm going to ask you, what are some moments you've been really proud of recently? What was your initial reaction when you found out about something, and what were emotions that accompanied it, that, or what were other emotions that came along and perhaps came like after that initial reaction?
So this is a moment with you, Sophia. I was working on the sound for Nightlight and you were composing music, and I had already told you that I probably wanted to chat with you and show you the work in progress so that we can kind of see if there's other music ideas that we can think of that would fit the film really well. And because we had already done some inspo music based on things I had sent you, but just wanted to see how everything would come together. And I had told you like, I'm gonna add a lot of different sound effects and I am not really sure how the music is gonna mesh with that. And I remember being so nervous to show you.
Really?
I was so nervous because I you know, when you're editing something or working with something for so long and you get in your head about it, you're like, I'm not doing enough. And then I showed you, you know, again, work in progress, what I've done. And I also was watching your face the whole time that you were watching that video. And I couldn't really tell what you were thinking. Because I wasn't sure if you were thinking about the music, about your own role in the music, or if your facial expression was like your reactions to watching the film. And so I had no idea. You had a poker face the whole time. And then when it ended, you were like, that was so magical. And that was like not even the word that I would have thought you would say. Like usually maybe like, that was good, or like, wow, that was so cool. But you said that was magical. And I was like, oh, really? And I couldn't believe that you said that at all. I was in disbelief because I was like, wow, it's magical. I didn't even think that was what I was going for. But yeah, I guess that was what I was going for, to have that reaction. And so
that's so funny. Okay, we've called so many times about Nightlight that you're like, let's call. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's just like another call. You're like, oh, I'll show you the film. I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't even realize that. I mean, obviously I knew you were working very hard on it, but I didn't think you were going
to. Yeah, you're just like, so... another call.
Yeah. And I was so chill. I was like, oh, this is cool. And I didn't know that behind the scenes you were like,
yeah. And your reaction was also so much more like exaggerated. No. Oh. Like when you reacted, you were like, oh, that was so magical. Oh. Like you like swiveled in your chair and everything. And I was like, really? Really? So initial reaction, disbelief, shock. And then really just being like, wow, I feel really good that I was able to create that kind of atmosphere in such a short amount of time. And then that made me feel so much better too, because I think the next day I showed it to my professor and he was like, this feels complete. Like, this feels really, this is really good.
This feels complete.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, okay, now two people have told me that this sounds really good. So I was really nervous because it was my first time ever doing sound. And I had that block in my head of, you know, opening up a new piece of software, like worrying that I was going to fuck something up by clicking the wrong key. And to have had such the opposite reaction to when I immediately showed it to you and my professor, really, really warmed my heart. So that is something I'm very proud of, that I was able to do such a good, to create such an emotive reaction from something that I tried out for the first time. So. Oh, what about you, so though? Precious. What's something that you're proud of recently? Let me hype you up.
Yeah, so I had another example prepared, but this other one came to my mind. So I am really anxious about logistical things. Like, for example, if I have like a recurring payment for like my apartment or like my car loan and something goes wrong and they send me an email saying I have to like reset it, it will take me days to read that email and figure out how to do it. Like learning, like I just have zero trust in the websites of airlines and banks and whatever to be intuitive and fast. And so these kinds of things like really scare me. And so my brother recommended me to read this personal finance book called I Will Teach You to Be Rich. And I was like, oh my God, this is literally the last thing that I want to read. But the book ended up being so funny. It was like a stand-up comedy show in book form, and you learn personal finance. It was really fun. And then I read the book and it just filled me with this sense of confidence and ability to like tackle these logistical things. And so I went on my to-do list and I just like zoomed through a bunch of things that I had put off for weeks. And then I went around my parents' house, because I'm in my parents' home right now. And I was just like, you know, this light bulb needs to be changed. And this light bulb has been out for the last like 6 months and I can't stand it being out anymore. So I just like in that moment got a ladder from my garage, yanked the light bulbs out, yanked out like 10 more light bulbs around my house, and then went to Home Depot and got a new set of light bulbs. And I was really proud of this moment because I have never like felt this rush of determination and confidence to tackle these like small, frankly stupid like logistical tasks before. But honestly, this book just really fired me up.
Yeah, no, that's incredible, because I mean, honestly, no one talks about, you know, how, because you know how sometimes people say that's like, there's like that stereotype of like, oh, like someone in the relationship should be like a handyman, the one who like knows how to go about the house and like fix everything. And I don't know how to do any of that. Like I freak out every time I get a letter and it says, any questions, call this number. I'm like, call, can I send an email instead, please? And then it just gets so scared of like what I'm going, like what kind, and it's just so baseless too. Like I haven't necessarily had like one bad experience that has traumatized me for the rest of my life. It's just very irrational fear. And so I am so glad to hear that it went from, you know, feeling this like you're hitting a wall to just this outpouring of I can do anything. Yeah. That's awesome.
This book, honestly, at first I was like, my God, freaking personal finance. Of course, my brother, who's like, you know, in tech and is all into stocks and crypto these days, is going to make me read this personal finance book. But it was actually really great. Like, it feels like a funny uncle at a party, like giving you life advice. So
yeah, hopefully now it's a lesson that Huey actually does give you good book recommendations too.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I'm so glad to hear that you're able to celebrate that, even though it's something that people can easily say is like, oh, everyone is able to do that. It's a big deal, because those are the small moments that just accumulate over time. You know, we could totally have been, you know, 50 years old and still feel really scared to do all of those things.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Should we move on to the next section?
Yes. Okay. So another piece I really loved is, what about your guilt is helping you?
Do you want me to read it?
Go ahead.
Yeah, let's switch off. Okay. When my therapist asks me, is this guilt necessary? I say, oh, absolutely. I wouldn't get anything done without it. And then when he asks, but what about joy? can you make joy necessary?
This really resonated with me because although I know that like biologically negative emotions, like being afraid and anxious, they're supposed to help you, that doesn't mean that the emotions that come to mind first are necessarily the emotions that are most helpful or sustainable. Like I imagine that, okay, yes, evolutionarily, maybe anxiety would spur me into action fast, more quickly than like joy. But that doesn't mean that it's like a necessarily always helpful emotion or that it's like sustainable to always be experiencing this anxiety. And so this also really connected with the first piece about, you know, like negative motivation versus positive motivation.
Yeah. Also that piece of what you just said about anxiety, I had a conversation with Andrea the other day, and something that really clicked for her was realizing that like anxiety, depression, all of the diagnoses that we hear nowadays is simply a product of the circumstances that society has put us in. You know, like it's just we have been put into a situation where we are working 9-to-5 jobs, where we are overworking ourselves, and we are supposed to strive for this type of perfectionism and for and to be focused so much on money because that's what's supposed to buy us happiness, and just all of these, you know, little things that have just accumulated over the centuries, over the decades, that have led so many people to have, you know, these same experiences and to experience these same conditions, which is not actually natural in the way that we were born in.
That reminds me of two posts that Irene Kim posted on her Instagram story recently. One of them, so she's a teacher and has been working with some pretty rough students. And so one of the posts was the coping mechanisms that get me through my day are going to be the reasons for like my demise, you know, like eating junk food or not sleeping very much just to try to cope with the anxiety of my work. That's going to be what's going to cause further like lack of sleep and further anxiety. So I was like, yes, that's very true. And the second post that she made was about how like our lives are set up such that we are so busy that we have to pay and earn enough money to be able to pay for accommodations and things rest to make our life simpler. Yeah, like we have to pay to deliver food because we don't have the time and energy to make food ourselves. And how just like this 9-to-5 life sets us up to have to spend so much money and as like a crutch to uphold this 9-to-5 life. And this is just like consumerism and capitalism helping itself at its finest.
Yeah, and I think there's this narrative that guilt motivates people. That's just been passed down, and you see it, you witness it when you see, you know, people lash out in conflict, in times that are stressful or not even stressful. Sometimes people just lash out for no good reason, and it guilt trips you. And I mean, I guess that's a form of gaslighting. And it's almost like guilt is this gatekeeper, where the cycle is you feel really, really guilty and you're like, oh, like I'm letting people down. And then when you realize that's not the case, it's like, oh, you feel really relieved. And that's almost the bar for happiness, like to feel relieved and be like rid of this guilt. And then it's like, okay, now I can be properly happy about this and properly like celebrate potentially. But then you go through that cycle over and over again. And I know that I definitely have that tendency of feeling like I'm letting people down when no one has, but then the thing is, no one has ever told me that I'm letting them down in the first place. And there was an incident that happened earlier this year where a professor told a teammate that my teammate was letting me down. And I just, as a third party person, just saw the impact of how someone else putting those words in my mouth already made my friend feel. Because even if my teammate knows, like I had, like maybe she could have like second guessed, like did Tan tell the professor that I'm letting her down? But even if like there could have been maybe that second guessing, but let's say like she knew that that wasn't true, and I hope that she knows that wasn't true, it's still realizing that this inner fear and this inner critic that, you know, is inside of you, as you know, you're already being so hard on yourself to do a good job and to put your best foot forward in these different projects. And, you know, I'm just like, Why do we put so much pressure on this all the time? Like why does, like, not everything I make has to be perfect, and not every situation I am in I have to present myself in my most perfect version, right? But there's a lot of guilt that comes with not giving your all, your 110% in everything that you're doing.
Yeah. I'm curious. So you did Amy's program, which is called Awakened Joy.
Joy.
So I'm curious if you have ever experienced making joy as a necessary part of your motivation and what that would look like.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of unlearning that has to be done, but I wanted to share it. There's a moment, because right now I am wanting to do a lot more screenwriting, and I have a lot of fear around just just typing out the first words. There's just something about feeling like, oh, those words are permanent and I have to commit to them. And if it's bad, then it's going to be bad and it's going to be bad forever. But I have this very distinct memory from when I was in fifth grade where we had a writing assignment where we were just supposed to write like a mini novel. We were supposed to write anything that we want to talk about or want to share. We just write a little mini novel, and it could be fictional, it could be nonfiction. And we were supposed to write, I think, like 20 pages. So on binder paper, both sides, 20 pages.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
I wrote 60.
Oh, wow.
Because I was so into fantasy at that time and action adventure novels. And I just remember my story was about, you know, these three girls who have been, you know, they've been talked about in prophecies, and they stumble upon this new world. And they even had code names, I think, like little titles that they were given. I just remember one of them was called Mystic Leopard. I was really obsessed with leopards when I was younger. I remember being so excited to write this one scene where I think they're facing a dragon, and they all pull out swords, and they say like, we'll do this together, and they say together at the same time before they go into battle.
Oh my gosh, look at you!
And I remember just being so excited, like something had unlocked at that moment where I was like, oh, I've always wanted to write like a fantasy novel, and I wanted to center like a bunch of girls too. And so I just went for it, and it wasn't ever about, oh, like, is this going to be good at all? What are people going to, like, are people going to look at me weird for writing 60 pages when we were only supposed to write 20? Like, I didn't have any of those thoughts going through my head. And so I think that I try to remember that to as a sign of, hey, there was a time when I just did things because they made me really, really happy. And that's totally possible to get back to that place. I think it's just also about rediscovering the things that just bring me a lot of joy, not just because other people like those things too.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a beautiful example.
What about you? How are you? Have you felt that you are noticing yourself being motivated by joy more recently, especially after reading this excerpt?
Yeah. Well, there was a recent example where I was feeling really stressed and I just really wanted some ramen. I love YY brand Tom Yum ramen. Okay, now you know Tom, my favorite brand of ramen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? I kind of just want to dress up and feel like a baddie in H Mart. So I did. I dressed up. I actually put on a little bit of makeup, even though I was going to be wearing my mask. I put on my fake Gentle Monster sunglasses, yes. The one that Sonya Jin wears in Crash Landing.
K-pop idol. And
I felt so cool walking into H Mart with like my heels and like my all black outfit. And I just, all I was really going for was feeling cool. That's kind of different from feeling joyful. I was more just like wanting to feel kind of cool.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like in other situations, maybe you could have had that little voice in your head that's like, oh, what if people look at you weird for wearing all that stuff in H Mart? But you're like, this makes me happy, so I'm just going to go do it just because I feel like it. I don't have to have a justifiable intellectual reason behind why I want to dress up in heels and go to H Mart. I just want to do it.
I have such good memories associated with that pack of ramen. Like, I went in and I cleared that H Mart of that ramen because I have it all stocked up in my house, in my apartment, which feels great. And that's awesome. It was just like a moment where I didn't think really hard about a decision. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to dress up and go to H Mart. Let's go. And I just like got ready and then got in my car.
Yeah. Like definitely there's this idea of like overthinking a lot of things, and joy doesn't have to be overthought in any way. Like your happiness doesn't, like if you feel happy, that's enough of a reason to do the things that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no one talks about that. It's always like, why do you want to do that? Why? Give me a good reason why you want to go do that.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you just want to feel like a baddie, one way to feel like a baddie is dress up in clothes you like and go to the grocery store.
Yeah. Specifically H Mart if you have an H Mart. I want to talk about a piece that nostalgia. Because I had a lot of, this was the one that I think stood out to me the most and I had a lot of thoughts on. Do you want to read the little excerpt?
Your favorite excerpt was, "Perhaps happiness flees so quickly after it visits that I forget that it even visited at all. And so I am just left remembering happy moments as times when I should have been happy, forgetting that I actually did feel happy, but it came and left so quickly that it was as if it didn't come in the first place."
Yeah, I feel like this is very thematically similar to the previous two we were just talking about as well, about celebrating and making joy part of our motivation. And again, I'm sure a lot of people have felt this feeling a lot. And I also know that I have this tendency in those happy moments to then think about the next thing that is going to make me happy and like, oh, how do I make myself feel this happy again? And that moment of happiness that I'm currently sitting in kind of gets defiled by that anxiety of like, am I ever going to feel that happy? The happiness I feel right now, like, how am I going to make sure that I feel this happy again? How am I going to make sure I'm going to get there? And also this idea that I have to earn my happiness by working really hard for that was also just something that I noticed about myself. And I was thinking about representation in films in a little bit of a different way compared to how we generally talk about it. So we took a script analysis class in my film school, and basically it breaks down the story into three acts, into sequences, and talks about the major events that happen across pretty much all stories. And something that I noticed as I was a little bit more analytical is that the resolution, you know, the happy ending that people talk about, that happens in the last 5 to 7 minutes of a film. I thought it was like last 15, last 20. No, it's really just the last 5 to 7 minutes of a film. Mm. And all of a sudden, you know, everything gets wrapped really nicely in a nice bow, and the protagonist is happy just for the 5 minutes at the end, you know? And if you think about it, if you're watching a 2-hour movie, you're watching 2 hours of the protagonist struggling and having all these terrible things happening to them, and also them fucking up and really regretting their decisions, to then be rewarded with 5 minutes of happiness at the very end. And it just really made me reflect on how this style of Western storytelling, in every single film, there's always a need for a problem. Like, there always has to be a problem that the protagonist is dealing with, a problem that happens to the protagonist, even if like they didn't deserve that problem. And it just really matches that fleeting moment of happiness that Johnny is talking about, in my opinion, of I've only really had stories model for me where I have to go through so much shit in order to be happy. And I'm only going to be happy for 5 minutes. And so I was just thinking about like, what could it be like to watch a movie where someone for the whole 2 hours experiences miracles, is having a great day, has incredible opportunities happening to them, and we just see them unabashedly celebrating that. I think most people would say that that's boring, or like that's not entertaining.
There's no plot.
There's no plot. And it's like, but I feel like if I were to have watched something like that, maybe that could have shifted my perspective a little bit about being able to celebrate being happy and not to have a reason to be happy. I'm curious what your thoughts are from my little thought, like, analysis of this.
Yeah, my mind immediately jumped to something. A podcast episode that I listened to like 8 years ago, and it was talking about the ways we talk about being in love. The verbs are always like falling in love, or I can't think of other examples, but love is described as something that like happens to you that is like kind of like dangerous, or these is something that you should, that kind of just like hits you and you really have like little agency over. It's like a feeling that kind of comes. And I thought that was a really interesting podcast episode because it talked about how the verbs that we use to describe love have shifted how we feel like love ought to be experienced and what counts as love and doesn't count as love. And that kind of relates to what you were saying, because if the stories that, you know, in our lives, everything that happens to us, we can spin a story of it, spin a story out of it, right? You see a certain series of events and you can pick and choose and kind of create the narrative that ties it all together. But if all the narratives that we're seeing are, you don't deserve to experience happiness until you've gone through a ton of bad things already, like, mm-hmm. how does that then change the story that we then tell of our lives? So mm-hmm. that's such a cool connection.
Another thing we learn in film structure is that we're supposed to, the protagonist is supposed to have a want and a need. And I think, especially after having gone through a couple of different coaching programs, that really bothers me that there's this idea that I need something, that I am lacking in something, and I am not whole just by the way that I am right now. And it's this, I feel like just the way that films are structured and stories are structured, it causes people to doubt moments of happiness, to be like, this is too good to be true. Like, this isn't going to last. And I think that's just really sad, because I want when I see friends who are, you know, genuinely celebrating, I want them to be really happy and to also share that unabashedly with other mm-hmm. folks as well. Mm-hmm. And for them to not second guess that they deserve this piece of happiness, or that this happiness isn't going to last any longer than like the 5 minutes that is in a film. And it's also, again, going back to the idea of naivete, I think kids don't have that same thought process of like, oh, this moment of happiness is too good to be true, and like, I can't, like, I'm not going to be able to feel this happy again. Mm-hmm. And happiness, again, I just feel like is so easily equated with like, oh, you don't know any better. You don't know what's out there, and mm-hmm. you are naive, and you are too young to understand the harsh realities of this world. But why do they have to be mutually exclusive, your happiness yeah. and the way that the world is?
Yeah, that actually reminds me of the piece we just talked about how if you're happy, you stop being critical, you stop growing, because in these stories, you're experiencing so much strife, you end, the last 5% of the story is happy, and then the story ends, and it kind of makes you feel like there's no, like, growth and progression beyond that happy ending. And so yeah, I actually see those
that's
pieces.
A good point. You don't grow in your happiness. You only grow in moments of struggle.
Mm-hmm. OMG, we should tell Johnny that this is what we thought about these pieces.
We should
tweet at Johnny.
So I mean, in the spirit of, you know, talking about films and like our lives being reflected in films, I wanted to hear about a memory that you really do clearly remember being happy in, where you didn't have a lot of that second guessing of yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of my memories with Kevin and with family, I remember being just like unquestionably, unchangeably happy in, because these are relationships to me that feel quite stable on the whole and like solid. So like, even though there are some moments of challenge, like on the whole, I feel like these are people who I really understand, and like relationships that I kind of like can see a really happy trajectory of. Like, you know, my brother really glowed up after 20 and I just can't imagine like disliking him anymore. And so it's kind of like that security of, if I'm spending an afternoon with him, this isn't the last happy afternoon that I'm going to spend with him. Like, the next weekend we're both going to have time to hang out again. And so I felt like this is really, really contrasted with me in high school, where I just wasn't trusting of my relationships, and I wasn't really sure if people were going to backstab me at any point. And so every moment of happiness, I just like really, really had to hang on to, but I was also scared that I would like put too much faith in that happiness in that person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm glad Huey glowed up. A lot. Yes.
The ultimate glow up would be him being willing to come on Bamboo and Glass, but that's going to take a lot of convincing.
Oh, okay. Well, Huey, I met you. I met you in person, so now you have two people who are probably going to be convincing you to come.
Yeah, well, tell him he can talk about personal finance if he wants.
Oh, yeah. I would love to learn about personal finance from someone. I need help. I need a lot of help. Okay. What's the next one you want to talk about?
Okay, I want to talk about friendship.
Okay.
So many amazing quotes from here. I'm trying to pressure myself less on what a friendship should be. So here are just some quotes. I'm kind of skipping around. Am I supposed to even talk to my friends every day? Who or what is influencing my thinking on what friendship should look like anyways? Where did I learn that from? And why do I give that authority over my own experiences? Is there some standard for friendship that I internalized from a kids show decades ago before the internet, before I grew up in a world that a kids show could have never predicted, that somehow I still hold myself to? If my friendships don't adhere to the expectations I've learned from TV, from media, from hearing stories about other people's close friendships, then does it mean that I don't have any real friends? Or do those expectations just make me feel guilty or make me feel like the relationships I have with the people I care about are not enough, are never enough, will never be enough? Perhaps the expectation of what friendship should be is ruining whatever semblances of friendship I do have. Maybe what I have, maybe a few texts a week, seeing someone once a year, maybe that's it. Maybe that's friendship enough. I do know that as I and all my friends are squeezed by this pressure to work in all aspects of our lives, everything and everyone else suffers and is squeezed out. I know that includes friendships, and everyone is so busy and under immense pressure trying to survive that I think we are collectively doing our best. I think I'm better off just calling friendships by whatever it is that I have to call by. If it feels like friendship and I enjoy it and I feel fulfilled by it, perhaps that's what it is. Perhaps I am safe to call it that. What else is there to go by, right? Or am I giving up? Ooh, just like a tumble of thoughts. I would love to hear your reactions to this piece.
Okay, I didn't think of what I'm about to say when I was planning for this episode, but I'm just going to share with you immediate memories that come up. There's this emphasis of like BFFs forever and only two people.
I was going to say that too.
Right? Only two people can wear that necklace. And then just this weird hierarchy of like, are you a friend or are you my best friend or are you my best friend forever? Like that was such an elementary school thing. And then when MySpace came around, there was the top six friends.
Same with Snapchat. Yeah.
Oh, was it in Snapchat too? Okay.
Yeah.
I was too old for Snapchat, but in MySpace, there would be so much drama over who put who in their top six friends. And I think there was a way to hide that section, but who's going to hide that section when everyone else has top six friends?
It's like a badge of honor. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be in the top six friends of all my friends. And there's like this weird gamifying almost of confronting, hey, why did you not put me in your top six friends? And that's just kind of what's coming up.
So you choose, it's not like based on activity and like how much you interact.
No. You explicitly choose. And like, you'll see like, if these two friends are having a fight, they get booted off the top six friends immediately. Or like, and then they'll come back like a day after if they make up. And it was like that volatile of like,
I'm shook.
Like that passive aggression of, hey everyone, look, I'm in a fight with this person because they're not in my top six friends anymore. So that's what comes up for me when I think about, again, what are the influences of what a friendship should be? And I guess, moving into modern day, I was reflecting on how the pandemic has caused, you know, some parts of life to feel at a standstill. And it's really limited the ways that we can, it's really changed the ways that we can connect with our friends. Like I can't necessarily appreciate a friend's physical presence by hanging out with them for long hours at a park or just moving around that way. I am kind of constrained to just doing a Zoom call, perhaps, and being creative with how I spend my time on the Zoom call. And I was also just realizing that I think during the pandemic, at least for myself and I think some other friends, I think it's led a lot of us to appreciate the small moments in life and to not only feel satisfied by grand plans and grand events that, you know, would happen. Because, you know, in college, there are so many big events that happen. In high school, there's like prom, homecoming, just all these big events that would also happen. And now, especially in post-grad life and during the pandemic, you don't really have a lot of those big things to go to and to have an excuse to see friends at. And instead, it's now these small moments. And I just kind of noticed that I was repeating myself a lot on a lot of Zoom calls, giving the same updates over and over again, being like, hey, like, I talked to this person like 2 days ago, and this is what we talked about, or this is what my experience at film school has been like, and saying the same things because I don't really have much else to talk about. And it kind of made me question for a second, like, is this friendship strong if I'm only giving updates all the time? If we're only giving updates all the time? And I think that's just my inner critic talking of like, oh, a friendship should be more than just giving updates all the time. Because that's something that comes up in relationships too. Like if you're in a long distance relationship and you're finding yourself only giving updates, that sometimes can be seen as, oh, like your relationship is like getting too comfortable, or like you're not working hard enough to keep the relationship going. And I think it kind of could apply to friendships as well. And I think I luckily at least have a lot of friends in my life where I know that if we don't keep in touch all the time, like we're still really are there supporting one another in spirit. But it is hard because it's like, I do want to catch up with all of you, but in the pandemic, it's just really hard to allot some more time on Zoom, even more so. And I want to talk to you one-on-one, but there are also other one-on-one calls that I want to have. And I think that's definitely been a struggle for me.
Yeah, I also really dislike that feeling of just repeating myself, because I then get tired of sharing the story and then I feel a little bit of guilty. It's like, I should be excited to catch my friend up.
You're not open. You're not open with your friend anymore, and you're not excited to be meeting with them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think for me, my Finsta has been a really good solution for that. Like, I can just explain things once and friends can asynchronously read my updates at any time that they want, and that has worked out really, really well for me. I think my Finsta feels like such a sacred space to connect with people who I love.
I have something in response to that.
Oh, yes, please.
So yes, I think social media is again really great because you can cast that wide net of sharing updates with people, and then they can respond to you accordingly if they have something to say. But what about my friends who aren't on social media that much? Like they're disproportionately not getting the updates.
Yep.
And in some ways that's just exercising a different type of muscle for me, because I am getting so used to sharing things on social media and rather than doing individual outreach. And if they're not on social media that much and I can't see them in person, then does that mean our friendship is not strong anymore? Because they're not getting all those updates all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have not caught up with friends who are not on social media. So that is a very limiting, that's a limiting thing about social media, especially because I think social media, there's such a reputation of it contributing negatively to your mental health. But yeah, a limitation for sure. I think a really big transition in my friendships, or the biggest one, was between graduating from college, was during the time I graduated from college, because I'm no longer living with my friends. Everything requires so much context and explanation, and we're all living really different lives. And I'm curious for you, do you feel like there are kinds of friendships and connections that you love that you wouldn't have been able to anticipate that you would have?
Well, I want to respond to what you just said about needing to give a lot of context and explanations. That's such a big thing, because I have so many friends who are in med school and I cannot for the life of me keep track of timelines, especially when it's like, oh, we catch up every few months. I'm like, are you in your first year? Are you in your second year? Wait, in second year, aren't you supposed to take that test? Like, are you in clinicals? Are you in classes? Like, I don't. And then sometimes it'd be like, oh, my program is different. And I'm like, okay, like how in the world am I going to keep track of all of that? Yeah. And you know, sometimes I feel bad because I don't ask for clarification, because I've noticed that a lot of people will ask me questions about filmmaking and film school because they're really curious, and I'm happy to share that. And I feel bad that I don't do the same the other way around, but that's also because I don't want a lot of information overload on, you know, the logistics of trying to understand. Like, if you just tell me that you're happy, then I'm like, okay,
great.
You're happy. Great. That's what's most important.
That's the main takeaway.
The main takeaway. I don't need all this fluff of like needing to understand every single detail. But I know that some people might measure friendships, closeness of friendships, by how invested and engaged people are about learning the details of what's going on in their lives. So that's another thing. But as for friendships and connections that I love that I couldn't have anticipated I would have, well, one, I think my friendship with Van Nguyen is really unexpected, because because we are twins in our sorority. When do you ever see, you know, you get paired by random with someone and for that to be not just a good friend, but like your best friend? And I think that's something I definitely always have to step back to think about being like, we literally did not know each other until SYZ and we got paired with the same big and we knew nothing about each other and not, and we've still kept in touch this whole time. And so that's a friendship I could have never anticipated because I wasn't even going to join Greek life in the first place. And I think another friendship is a more recent one, which is Amy had invited me to hang out with someone that she was also meeting for the first time. And I was like, you know, the only people that I've been able to see in person are people who have been longtime friends or people I have spent a significant amount of time virtually with who I am now finally seeing in person for the first time. This person, I knew nothing about him. And I just knew Amy's meeting up with him, so I'm going to join because I want to hang out with Amy too. And we had so much fun just chatting, and we're probably going to have him on the podcast soon, so look out for that. And I was so worried about like language barriers, cultural barriers, but we just all had very similar opinions on a lot of topics that we were talking about. And he is just I've already hung out with him again. So it's just really cool that this is someone I literally met 2 weeks ago and I've already hung out with him twice for like multiple hours. And we're going to try to see each other again next week with Amy. And it's just one of those friendships that is just completely unexplainable because literally if Amy had not invited me, then I would have not known about this person for a very, very long time. So that's another example.
Yeah.
What about you?
Throughout high school and college, I made a lot of friends online, which I think is pretty unique to me and to you as well. I don't know that many other people who have done that. So I have continued that. That hasn't been surprising. One big surprise is the friendships that I have with people who are like 5 to 10 years older than me. So in high school, you know, if the biggest age gap you would have is someone 3 years older than you. And you would be friends with them for a year and they would graduate and your friendship would just really die off because there's just like nothing you really have in common after that year of overlap in school. Same thing with college. But now in the workplace, the people who I met on my first team at Microsoft who are 5 to 10 years older than me, they are people who are still in my life. And that is so cool. Like I've always loved making friends with people who are a bit older than me. And now in the workplace, it's like, I don't have to like try to act like a cool older kid to like impress them because we already work together and are happy working together. And I don't have to worry about them like going on to a completely different stage of life and leaving me behind because it's pretty likely that we'll continue to work together for, you know, 1 or 2 more years. And even if we don't work together, our lives are not going to change like drastically in the way that your life would change drastically if you went from being a senior in high school to a freshman in college. And so those types of friendships are so precious. And I was recently, you know, we're writing our performance reviews for work and my manager wrote something very kind about me. And I just thought of so many people to send it to. And so many people who would be excited for me, like people who I had met 3 years ago or last year who are 5 to 10 years older than me, who, would like understand how significant these comments are. So yeah, that's a really precious friendship dynamic that I've been enjoying.
Wow. And I think something that's so different about the workplace compared to the institutionalized schooling that we've gotten is that you quite explicitly will ask people like what year you are in college or in high school. And I think at least for me, that knowing that as a freshman, I'm meeting someone who's a senior, like I definitely would get really nervous about that. But then with people in the workplace, like, yes, you might know how old people are, but you won't always know how old people are unless you explicitly ask. And that's just not a common thing to ask about. And also there's like a similar form of grades and years in terms of like the level of the level that you're working at. But that's also not something that you just casually ask like the first time that you're meeting someone. And so I feel like there is more of a chance to be equals with people in the workplace. And it just really depends on, the openness that people have about wanting to get to know someone who is quite different from them. Like maybe someone who looks a lot younger, someone who looks a lot older. And I think there is a little bit more of that openness for sure.
Yeah, more openness and also more like investment in mentorship. Because I mean, if I was a freshman in college, I don't really think a senior in college is like trying to really mentor me. Like maybe they would offer advice, but we're only overlapping for a year. So even if they were a mentor, it would only last a year. But in the workplace, there are so many people who have kindly offered to mentor me. And that's seen as like a really deep friendship that extends beyond your commitment to the same workplace. So there's also that like extension and deepening of friendship there.
You reminded me too when you mentioned the age gap. I'm really good friends with my admissions officer from Stanford. And this was someone who I honestly did not even think to keep in touch with at all, because admissions officer, I was just like, thank you for the stamp of approval, now I get to go live my life. And then I just happened to sign up for like a academic counseling session with her, and I didn't know who she was. And then I walked in and I was like, hi, I introduced myself like, hi, like I'm Tan, nice to meet you, because I am trying to put on a good impression. And then she's like, do you remember me? And I was like, oh no. And I was like, I don't remember her, I'm so terrible. And then she's like, I read your essays, your application. And I was like, I was just in so much shock. And I remember the fact that we were able to hang out like over the summer, where she like picked me up in her Prius, and she, I think she like accidentally ran over a curb, and she was like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And then we just went to Meat Fresh in Cupertino, because she was like, Meat Fresh is one of my favorite dessert places. I was like, wow, I could have never imagined being in this close relationship with someone who is 5 to 10 years older than me.
Yeah. Oh, that is precious.
Yes. Okay. All What's right. the last section you want to talk about?
I want to talk about a piece called On Peace, and it's about deadlines and making decisions about your free time.
Okay. I'll read it for you. Okay. Deadlines bring me some sort of happiness too, I suppose, in the form of a kind of peace. Having a deadline looming is almost a peaceful thing, because it feels as if the deadline simplifies all the variables of living. It forces everything not deadline related to blur out of focus. Without a deadline, time feels too open to be peaceful. That freedom is crushing, because it feels like looking at a big blank canvas of usable time, and then being forced to solve how to use it best. It takes so much work just to get to figuring out what to do with the time. There are too many possibilities, too much potential, and by extension, too much pressure. Because what if I do the wrong thing? What if I squander the options? Is now the time to work? And if so, what do I work on? Is now the time to rest? And if it is, how can I rest in the best way possible? How do I get the most rest? But if it is the time to rest, doesn't this mean I can use this time to be not resting instead? And so I feel like I can only find peace within focus and defined time. Without a focus, all that undefined time causes me to freeze as I try to calculate and plan and decide in my head on what the most worthwhile thing to spend my time on would be. And then suddenly I look up and the day is over and I've squandered my day anyway, lost to the promise of potential. But on deadline days and the days leading up to a deadline, it feels like all of that falls away. The deadline shuts everything else out, and I feel magically able to focus on the thing that is the most pressing. And with that comes a solace from the fears that I am not using my time to its greatest potential. The magic that brings this about is just pressure, but a different kind of pressure than the seemingly unsolvable pressure of having undefined time. The peace that comes with having your time be defined by a deadline is that the deadline presents you with only one way to use your time, and says there's only one thing you can do in order to relieve this pressure. And so you stop worrying about how to use your time and are finally free to just go about using it. And I'm bothered by the fact that my feeling peace requires an external trigger. And worse, that the external trigger required is work. But for all the stress that deadlines bring, they also promise, don't worry about anything else. This is what's important. Trust me. And I enjoy believing it. It is a soothing lie.
Beautiful narration. I love this piece because, oh man.
We've talked about this, like separate of this excerpt too.
Yeah, this really put my feelings into words. But
how do you feel about deadlines, Sophia?
I totally agree that the focus and the focus is so helpful, because I don't have to worry if other ways that I would have other mechanisms and frameworks for prioritization, I don't have to weigh those. I mean, it's exactly like what he said. I think he put it perfectly. I'm curious about your experience of deadlines, because you, like for me, since graduating, I've done primarily two different types of work. I have my Microsoft program management work, and then I have my podcast works, like personal, you know, project. For you, you've had a lot of different types of work and deadlines, you know, deadlines for your software engineering, full-time job, deadlines for film school, for personal projects, and all the other things that you do. And so I'm curious if those deadlines feel different from each other and how you have been unlearning the anxiety around spending free time productively or not productively.
So this is a very timely question because I'm kind of in vacation mode right now. Like there isn't a specific deadline. There's sort of a vague deadline of I'm going to Korea in about a month, and so I should probably work on things, but it's not super time pressured right now. And so I honestly feel my relationship with deadlines is that it makes me very nervous, actually. Deadlines, so kind of the opposite of what Johnny is saying. Deadlines make me really nervous because I'll plan, as a someone who's such a habitual planner, like a long-time planner, I'll plan to, let's say, like submit an application that's due in 3 weeks. And then from the beginning, rather than letting myself enjoy like the early days where I could, you know, be free and having like just play time with myself, I instead tell myself, I'm going to get a head start and I'm going to like conquer this. And then I go through that cycle of beating myself up of, oh, like I wasted the day and I was feeling anxious all day about like, I need to work on this thing. And then I get to the end of the day and I hadn't worked on it. And I'm like, Tan, like you need to work on it. Otherwise you're going to start freaking out at the, like when it gets closer to the deadline. And in some ways I'm kind of like, maybe I could have just enjoyed my day without having this worry in my head, taking up so much space. Because what's so wrong? Like what is one day of fully enjoying myself actually going to do? And I didn't really feel that until my birthday weekend, the most recent birthday, because James and I went to San Diego. And I remember I was editing a film for someone else. And I was so nervous because I was like, I need to get everything done in time. I want to make sure that they're not worried about me slacking off, like, because I'm not going to want to slack off. And it just, the timeline kept kind of getting pushed, mainly because that person who was filming, he had some other issues, and so he wasn't able to get me the footage in time for me to edit it as fast as I could. And so I went into my weekend being like, I'm going to bring my laptop with me in case I need to do any work. And then I actually never took it out because we were out and about all weekend. And I think I was able to justify to myself, like, it's my birthday. I don't need to be thinking about homework right now. And then I got back and I felt so refreshed and I was able to get my work done way earlier than I thought I would. And so that was a big learning for me of like, you know, just a couple days of rest, it's really not going to hurt you. It actually can help you a lot more than you would think. And fun story is that I have this Oracle deck that I got. And basically an Oracle deck is just like cards of guidance, and I will just pull it was mainly just for fun at first, where I would just pull cards and just see like, oh, what could the universe want me to focus on or think about today? And it's just like they're in some ways vague enough for you to think about where it can apply to different aspects of your life depending on what you're focusing on. There's like 54 cards in there, and for 2 weeks straight I kept pulling the same card, and it was rest. And it was annoying me because I kept pulling rest and I was like, okay, like I guess I should rest. But then I would rest, but then I'd also still be doing other work. So I'm like, oh, like I need to be productive with my free time. And then I kept getting rest again. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? I've been resting. And then if I'm honest with myself, I'm like, no, I'm still thinking about all the things that I have to do. And I keep trying to be efficient with it and always be productive and, you know, make myself seem even more productive than I actually am. There's like this weird mental gymnastics that I do too of, oh, if I say I'm on vacation, I'll say I'm on vacation, but then I'll get some more work done like while I'm on vacation. So then people will be even more astounded by me, by my exemplary performance, because I'm just so hardworking and I just am so committed to the product that I'm working on. And I just robbed myself of the rest and the free time that I could have been spending on myself. So I don't know if your relationship to rest and deadlines is this complicated as mine, but I'd love to hear what your experience is too.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting that in planning ahead, you could give you yourself a lot of peace and just happiness knowing that, like, hey, I've allocated enough time for this, but it almost feels like you gave yourself more milestones to achieve. So it's like more opportunities to like mm-hmm. try to achieve something.
Mm-hmm. More opportunities for failure too. Like, I think the number of times I've had to-dos and I'm like, okay, let's move into the next day because I didn't get to it.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that I thought about, you know, kind of bringing back to my anxiety around like personal finance and logistics. It's really hard when you set these ambitious goals and you don't meet them and you kind of give yourself a little bit of an excuse. You're just like, okay, that was ambitious anyways. It kind of erodes your own trust in yourself. And that mm-hmm. is kind of scary and hard to rebuild. Mm-hmm. So that's something that, like, I think deadlines have really caused that, like, erosion of trust for myself. I think for me, deadlines are the worst when I'm not sure how to do something. They feel very different when all I have to do is invest time and energy into something that's already very clear. So for example, my CS assignments were just the most ultimately stressful thing ever. My math assignments too, because I just believe that, to me, I felt like a lot of the times there's no methodical way to arrive at an answer. Sometimes I would just try a bunch of things. It would work or wouldn't. Or a stroke of genius would, you know, strike me and I'd be like, oh, like,
yeah, sorry. And you can't.
A moment of genius would strike me. Yeah, exactly. But work, my PM work is so much less stressful from a deadlines perspective, but also more stressful from a relationship management standpoint. I feel like the things I can't figure out sometimes are things that are like a relationship with someone that aren't really deadlines. It's kind of more of a long-term thing. I've never really felt like the individual pieces of work are things that I have to struggle through on my own and not be able to methodically think through. I think I can methodically reason through any piece of work that I have to do. And also, I think work has been less stressful overall than school, because the standard for working friends is to stop working when work is over. All of my friends watch TV after work. And so the standard is like, if I want to watch TV, that's fine. Rather than if I'm watching TV, I'm like slacking off compared to everyone else. Although I will say this pressure would be very different if I was closer with friends who were working on their own startups or who were freelancers. I have to say that most of my friends are other folks who work in big tech companies, and so we're a little less stressed.
Is it really less stressful? Because I feel like your workday is also like 12 hours.
It's long, but I would say it's a lot of work, but it's not like stressful for all of it. It's just a lot of stuff to do and I just have to get it done.
And you know how to, you know what the action yes. plan of what you need to do. Yeah, right. I think your comment about the relationship management standpoint is a good one, because there, you know, sometimes people will ask for advice on like, when should I talk to this person about this thing? There isn't a deadline for that. It's just more of like an anxiety thing yes. of like, how long do I want to feel anxious about this for, but also really scared about, oh, if I bring this up, it really could fuck up the relationship that and affect and have a ripple effect on like all the different people involved in the project or at the workplace. And so that is very interesting. Do you put deadlines on yourself for relationship management stuff?
Yes, I do. I plan out every single one-on-one I have with someone. I plan out far in advance. Like, if I feel like I need to arrive at a consensus with someone on something and I don't think the relationship or the decision is budging, I will make a work back schedule and be like, I need to have a casual chat with this person at this point. And next week I should bring up this idea and try to build the relationship in this way. So in some ways, relationship management does have deadlines, but it's kind of more like, it's a little bit... The stress is not from the deadline. The stress is from having the conversation itself. It's not like
But the deadlines are helping you manage the stress, because it's not just like, oh, I need to convince them to do this thing, and kind of. I don't really yes. know how to do that.
I guess the deadlines give me milestones and a feeling of progression, but it's not like
it gives
I
you peace. Consensus.
Kind of, but it's not like I always achieve the consensus I need at every single week.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I think when I was working, I think I was definitely a lot more impulsive. Like, if I'm like, if this is bothering enough, I'm just gonna go tell the person like that I'm feeling this way and I want to figure this out. That happens so many times. I'm really not good at making that kind of schedule with relationship management, because I don't really know how I could plan for how I would feel like two weeks from now too about this. I only know how I feel, how I felt and how I feel right now.
So that's very interesting. I think for me, the people I have conflict with are often really are more senior than I am. So they're busier and I have to be very careful with my words. And so I would not act out of my emotion because that would not go over well.
Yeah. And to your point about, I guess, like sort of like freelancing. And I think it's also interesting because for you, when you're doing your work, do you still feel this pressure to like be up to date, like on TechCrunch about all the new content that is going on that is that would be relevant to your PM work or your product that you're working on? Because that is stuff that could you can easily do that work out, end up doing that work outside of work, right?
Yeah. I do read up on tech news, but for me, it's so interesting and it's so fun that it hasn't felt like a burden yet.
Yeah, I asked that because when you said that all your friends watch TV, TV feels like work now because it's work. It literally is work. Someone told me in a Clubhouse conversation that I can file my TV as a tax deductible because it's technically for work. And I remember someone was really upset when I told them this because they're like, okay, that seems really excessive. I'm like, okay, but also like literally people who work in entertainment make no money. Like let's get something. Let me get my tax deductible from my TV at the very least. And so TV doesn't always get to feel like rest because I am needing to analyze or feel really bad if I'm not analyzing TV. And it also it's also such an easy like go-to filler time for me, like for me to just go on autopilot being like, oh, like I have free time, what am I gonna do? Okay, I'm gonna watch some TV. When instead I could probably be spending some time thinking about the next story that I want to write and have some open time to myself. And so it is a little bit different because I think being, I guess even if you are working at a 9-to-5 job in entertainment, I think there's still this pressure to be creative and to gain inspiration outside of work. So that can feel like work too.
Well, thank you so much for reading all these pieces and chatting about them. This was really fun. We haven't just caught up about this. And it was a fun way to like catch up about what's been going on in our lives.
Yeah, that's what I really appreciate about this little book, because it's not necessarily, again, a plot of like beginning, middle to end. It's just a collection of different thoughts and wonderings that Johnny has had that a lot of people could relate to. And there's no right or wrong answer to any of this, but it's really cool to just hear like how your perspective on one piece is very different from mine, and because of the experiences that we've had. And that's not something that might naturally come up in a conversation if it weren't for this essay. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed our thoughts about belonging, productivity, striving, motivation, nostalgia, discipline, mental health. Thanks for tuning in. And the book we were reading together was Goodbye Again by Johnny Sun. I encourage you to find it somewhere, read it for yourself. These are really small pieces that you can enjoy in any order at any time that you would like. And it has brought us a lot of joy, and we hope that you will really enjoy reading it too. And thank you again for joining us for this episode. If you enjoyed any part of it, please think of a friend who might enjoy it as well and let them know that we are on every single podcasting platform. And yeah, thank you, Tan. It was so nice to catch up. And to our listeners, we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Bye.